The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
First, though, I want to read this quote to you. I wonder when a peace movement will start in relation to the conflict in Ukraine. Neither side seems keen to compromise or involve diplomatic efforts to broker a ceasefire leading to peace talks. So says Conor Lenehan, former Fianna Fáil Minister of State. Conor, you're welcome to the show. Can you expand on the point you were trying to make?
Well, it's not a big point. I'm surprised you picked up on it, but glad that you have, because I think any reasonable person would feel that given how long this has gone on, this particular conflict, and given the loss of life of poor Ukrainian people, civilians being bombed and killed, and you know the damage that's been done not just to Ukraine but to the wider European economy, and the prospect this winter of people being made very poor indeed by high electricity bills and energy bills generally, that somebody somewhere, I would have thought at this stage, would have started and tried very vigorously to bring about some element of a peace process here where, you know, you had a ceasefire and then potentially some form of negotiation. I know the Turkish president did try this very early on, but seems to have gotten nowhere with both sides apparently resisting the idea of trying to get a ceasefire.
Now, there'll be people listening and they think peace could break out in the morning if Putin decided to end this illegal invasion and occupation, that the ball is completely in his court.
It is. It is, in possibly, yes, in his court. But it's also, President Zelensky has a responsibility as well to consider the life prospects of his own citizens. And the longer it goes on, I would have thought, the worse it gets for the people of Ukraine. And, you know, there's a humanitarian argument here that people should put aside, if you like, the culture of blaming people at this stage in order to establish a very simple thing called peace. That's the way to do it in Ireland. We didn't particularly like, and lots of people didn't like the idea of having to make peace with the IRA. But, you know, I wrote a book, a biography of Albert Drell's called Risk Taker for Peace, which is precisely about that process. It's about how people, like, suspended their natural antipathy for the other side and tried to achieve peace. And that was done. We saw David Trimble was buried during the week, and he was one of those people who stood outside his traditional beliefs, if you like, to engage with the IRA and see if peace could be achieved.
Now, if I was Ukrainian listening to this, I think, aren't you great lads in Ireland up on your high horse talking about the compromises you made for peace, and it took you 800 years after the invasion to get there, and you're telling us to do it when only less than 8 months ago we were a sovereign nation without Russian boots on our soil?
Yeah, I'm not suggesting. I'm telling the Ukrainians what to do. So I think you better. That seems to be the supposition of your question. I'm not suggesting that at all. I merely made a post of that, my view that I've just explained to you, on a LinkedIn, and your program obviously rang me up and asked me to expand on it, and I am expanding it. I believe profoundly the best thing in the world is to have some sort of peace and not to have violence, that the absence of violence, as we've seen in Ireland, is quite a significant thing. And I'm wondering aloud, if you like, why such a clamour has not begun in relation to this conflict. I mean, of course, nobody's doubting that Russia was the aggressor here and they breached Ukrainian sovereignty, and you know that's well known, and you know, there's a whole set of restrictions and sanctions placed on Russia and individuals in Russia as a result of that. And they would probably continue if one were in a proto kind of peace effort. But I mean, I think it's very important that we try to save lives and also save the welfare of our own people in Ireland and in the UK and in Europe generally, that they don't face a winter where they find they're falling below the poverty line because of the huge energy bills they have to pay.
Yeah, but indirectly, is that not a suggestion that Ukraine give up some of its sovereignty so our electricity bills don't get too high?
No, I'm simply asking for the ceasefire. People stop killing each other. I'm not going to dictate or say on the radio there should be this outcome or that outcome, but my point here is that the saving of human life, I think that's absolutely crucial, and nobody seems to put this first at all. And, you know, Like, we've been very welcoming in Ireland, and many people in countries in Europe have been welcoming and accepting Ukrainian people fleeing the conflict. And but I'm sure lots of those would like to go home and like to return to their lives in Ukraine. And, yeah, you know, obviously a ceasefire would assist in that as well.
Yeah, and listen, it's true to point out that almost all conflicts end in some sort of negotiated settlement. It is rare that you get the absolute obliteration of one side or the other. There's some sort of settlement ultimately, and you'd have to guess if you're a betting man there'll ultimately be some sort of negotiated settlement at some point when it comes to Ukraine and Russia. I think the problem that the Ukrainians have, and this is what I gather just from speaking to some of them on this show and some members of parliament from Ukraine, is that they say, Conor, it's impossible to begin that process or to engage in negotiations or talks or ceasefires with the Russians because they say they're just not to be trusted. And they point at the fact that, you know, peace talks collapsed previously. They point at the fact that there was an agreement about humanitarian corridors, only for the Russians then to promptly bomb those corridors. There was an agreement about getting grain out previously. I know it's after getting out in the last week, but there had previously been an agreement to get it out, only for the Russians again to bomb those silos and steal the grain in other silos. You know, there's a commitment early on in the conflict to adhere to the rules of war, only for the Russians to intentionally target civilians and use sexual violence as a weapon of war. This is the difficulty they have then, Ukrainians, with, you know, a pleas to engage in talks with the Russians.
Yes, but in fact, that level of distrust is not untypical. I was involved in a very minor way as a TD, then subsequently as a minister, in our own peace process. And there was huge distrust from the IRA about the British and their intentions, and vice versa. There was huge distrust even amongst the Irish public of the IRA and its intentions. So, you know, that's very typical of a conflict situation. But at some point, somebody in authority, be they senior, or indeed, as was the case in Ireland, clergymen of one kind or the other, religious people of one side, start trying to agitate to achieve some level of ceasefire that would lead to a peace. A ceasefire meaning ending the loss of life, which I thought was a cherished value pretty much anywhere you go in the world. So I don't quite understand why, when people put up the concept or the idea of having a peace, why people start resisting and fighting it. I don't frankly get it. And that's what surprised me most, in that it seems like people seem prepared to let this go on and on. And I don't think that's in the interest of the people of Ukraine at all. Because, you know, Russia is a very powerful country, whether we like it or not, and we certainly don't like the fact that they've invaded their neighbouring country. But they have huge oil resources, and they're getting more money every day for those as the price rises.
You don't understand why people are resistant to talk, and you've actually explained why they're resistant there, because the talks are all predicated on the idea that Russia is this powerful country and Ukraine can't do anything about it, and there are Russian troops on the ground, and Russia is in control of territory in the Ukraine.
You're jumping to conclusions.
No, I'm dealing with reality.
But I don't know what you're dealing with. Frankly, I know you have a show there, but I'm actually articulating a case for peace there. I'm not saying that Russia should win the destruction or Ukraine should win this. I'm simply saying that the art of any process of removing violence is compromised by all sides of one kind or the other. Of course the Ukrainians don't trust the Russians, and of course the Russians probably don't trust the Ukrainians. And, you know, that's as it always and always is prior to violence ending.
When Russia is in control of so much Ukrainian territory, compromise surely means giving up some of that territory to Russia.
Well, I don't know if it does or not. I mean, that's, you know, you can never predict the outcome of these discussions. And the same could be said, for instance, of the Good Friday Agreement. Nobody expected it to happen quite the way it did. There was some significant and skillful intervention, primarily by the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, and indeed George Mitchell, who very skillfully brought the parties together and tried to convince, persuade, or cajole them into accepting things that they might never have accepted before they entered those actual discussions. So, you know, I'm very positive about the idea of peace talks or negotiations of one kind. And I know that the Ukrainians are very sophisticated people. I've some great friends, and I was in Ukraine prior to the
outbreak. So you think it's a possibility? You think they should be engaging in talks, and it is quite possible that one of the outcomes would be that Russia will completely withdraw its forces from Ukraine.
Well, I don't know. I frankly don't know. But peace talks can take a very strange twist in their own right, because
that would be a strange twist.
What?
That would be a strange twist. A strange twist, that would be up there. That Vladimir Putin would withdraw his troops back to the borders pre-February.
Well, let's look at it another way then. The prospects of continuing the war is that the Russians would probably, given the strength of their army and it is disproportionately sized, is far too big, really. They can continue with this for quite a long while, I suspect. I don't particularly relish the prospect of that. But I think that's something that we should be considerate of. That, you know,
yeah.
If this goes on for a very long time, then more and more people will die. And really, quite frankly, I think if the Western countries, the United States and others, are so strong and vehemently supportive of Ukraine, they should commit actual truce, because that's the only way you will stop. I mean, you're absolutely right. You said it yourself there. There's a disproportionality here. Russia is a far bigger, stronger, wealthier country with more munitions, more military hardware than the core Ukrainians. And, you know, despite the best efforts of the West to give them equipment and keep giving them more sophisticated equipment, they have actually been denying them some of the sophisticated equipment that they've been requesting and asking for. So, you know, to my point here is that either we get into a real war, which will cost lots of lives, and I'm certainly not advocating that, but you either commit fully to a full-scale combat to remove the Russian presence, or you commit to a negotiated settlement of some kind. I don't see the logic of it. I don't see it being helpful to the protection of human life to have it continuing.
Well, 53106 is the text number if people want to get in touch with their own views. Connor, thanks a million for taking the time to talk to us. Connor Lenehan is, of course, a former Fianna Fáil Minister of State.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.